The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
Sloan Lish, Sloan to Clare. What impact will high-profile departures have on the beleaguered health strategy? 3 weeks to the budget. Where will the axe fall and who is lining up for a slice of this ever-expanding pie? And did developers get a sweetheart deal from Housing for All? All that and more on tonight's Late Debate. But first, joining us in studio, we have Kieran O'Donnell, Fine Gael TD for Limerick, Mairead Farrell, Sinn Féin TD for Galway West South Mayo, Michael Healy-Ray, Independent TD for Kerry, and Craig Hughes, political correspondent for the Irish Daily Mail. We want to hear from you as well, so please do get in touch. You can text us on 51551, email us on latedebate@rte.ie, or you can tweet to @latedebate_RTE. Now, I was watching some of you guys earlier because, as you know, we are marchers for Oireachtas TV on the Late Debate desk. And this was, of course, the debate on Sinn Féin's Planning and Development Amendment Bill, which would roll back the exemption for developers that long-fingered the necessity for them to deliver 20% social and affordable homes on private land. Ono Brin was saying that there aren't 36,000 genuinely affordable homes in the Housing for All plan because he says many of them will actually be unaffordable and only affordable because they can be purchased with up to 100 grand from the Minister's controversial shared equity scheme.
So therefore, the number of actual affordable homes that will be delivered under the new plan, particularly in 2022, 23, 24 and 25, will be embarrassingly low. And that is why this exemption, and it is a sweetheart deal, Minister, to developers, they are benefiting at the public's expense. That's why it was the wrong thing to do. That's why it should be revisited.
The wrong thing to do, says Ono Brin, but Fine Gael's Peter Burke insisted.
Using one-line rhetoric suggesting sweetheart deals that isn't borne out by fact, which I have referenced in the speech in terms of the decision in relation to Part 5, already have been made before decisions and submissions close, in effect 2 weeks prior to that.
Kieran O'Donnell, the fine print on that Housing for All, do you think people were quite shocked with that? Because this was going to be one of the headline things. We were going to bring back the 20% Part 5. This was going to help deliver the affordable home quotas. And then we hear at the last minute, yet again, another last minute change to housing legislation, which exempts developers from doing that until way down the line. I mean, we're talking about maybe we won't see these houses on that 20% thing up until 2030?
The model is 10% social, 10% affordable. 10% social has been there for a number of years. 10% affordable is something we're looking to bring back. The government got advice from the Housing Finance Agency, which stated that what was being brought in at the moment would have the unintended consequence of making houses even more expensive. So the government are looking at it. We want to ensure
that didn't seem to bother the government when that was exactly what was said about the shared equity scheme.
No, the shared equity scheme at the moment, right, is and as there's an element, I suppose, of confusion here. The shared equity scheme is another one of the measures that is being looked at to enable people that homes are affordable. It's being looked at by the central bank at the moment.
This is despite the fact that we were told that they had approved it twice by the minister.
I think it was once again a air of confusion there. I think the confusion was that the minister was speaking about that it was an equity scheme rather than a debt scheme. This is about putting in place something that people can afford to purchase their own home. One of the elements to that is the state would put an equity element in, maybe up to 20%, and then over time people could buy back that equity stake and own their home. This is just one of a range of measures, and I think what we want to do here is if you brought through a measure, if you have a state agency advising the government that what is being proposed could have that unintended consequence of making homes even, we'll say, at a higher price, the government must take account of that.
And are you actually seriously just making that sentence? Because that is exactly what several state agencies have done in relation to the shared equity scheme. And the minister is ploughing ahead regardless.
No. The national financial, this is pure, I'm just talking now about the affordable side, right? The Taoiseach in the Dáil Éireann and Leader's Questions referenced that. The government want to ensure when the affordable housing scheme comes in, That it's done in a way, that's the 10% affordable, and it's something I very much support.
I do hear what you're saying, Ciarán. I don't want to cut across you. What I'm saying is that you are now saying that we can't go ahead with this because one state agency told us that this might the unintended consequences of making houses less affordable.
With due respect,
but isn't that not exactly what people are saying and what many agencies have warned will happen with the shared equity scheme?
The shared equity scheme is a scheme. It's just one of a range of measures, which is the state takes an equity in the house along with the mortgage.
I think we all understand the concept.
But the point I suppose I'm making here is that the government are still looking to bring the affordable housing scheme in as quickly as possible. When it's coming in, we want it to work.
Will you address the point I'm making? If it's not good enough to go ahead with a scheme because one state agency says it will have the unintended consequences
scheme of an affordable scheme is the correct way to go about it. It's the construct of that and the old scheme that was there. If that was reintroduced in its today in the form that it was in, it would have, because there was an affordable housing scheme prior to the crash, which was there, and if that particular mechanism was brought in, it would have that impact. And certainly I think that whatever's brought in the affordable must ensure that they are at a level that is low as possible for the household.
Okay. Murray.
First time buyer, really, we're talking.
Look,
about.
I think we very clearly have an unaffordability crisis here, right? In terms of housing, in terms of rents, in terms of buying and everything. What we need to do is everything in our power to change that, to make houses affordable for people. Now, the minister said, and I heard him this evening when he said that it was borne out by fact. But let's look at things. Like, I mean, in the last few days, on the 15th of September, so what are we on now? I'm not, maybe the 17th.
The 21st.
Thank you. But on the 15th of September, the CSO published its, resident property price index. And it showed that prices increased on residential properties by 8.1% nationally. Now, in the Western region, that was 9.1% for houses. For apartments, that was 14.6%. Now, I come from Galway City. People in Galway City who've lived their lives in Galway City are not able to rent in Galway City. They're not able to buy in Galway City. They have to move outside of the area. Now, we had a situation in my own estate, Merview, just outside my estate. An apartment building block just got built to rent, over 300 apartments just last week. Residents are furious. They're saying our children, our grandchildren won't be able to buy, stay in the local area. So, there's clearly an unaffordability crisis. This year is pushing it out to 2026, and that's why this important important bill was brought forward by my colleague Owen O'Brien.
With your respect, right?
I want to let you respond now because I want to let Michael in on this
for all,
as well.
If you wish.
No. Yeah, very quickly.
Sinn Féin come up with a rhetoric which is saying it's wrong, it's not working. But at the end of the day, show us the solutions. And just let me finish on this point. We all want the houses to be affordable, but we equally want to bring in something that at least we are guaranteed that we get to the lowest possible price. Share equity is one of those measures. The affordable housing scheme, the 10% that was there historically, that scheme needs to be rejigged to ensure that when the current scheme comes in on affordable housing, that we don't have that unintended consequences where it makes houses more expensive than it should be for people. And houses are being built. There are houses being built in Dublin and across a range of areas, and I think
are affordable houses being built in Dublin right now? Because I have not seen them.
I haven't seen them in Galway either. There was a 6-year period where no houses were built in Galway, and I can quote you Housing for All. It says current planning permissions will be unaffected and land purchases between 2015 and 2021 will continue at 10%. However, this will change in 2026.
No, you're missing the point. The point is very simple. The Tánaiste in the leader's question is said specifically, they got advice that effectively the construct on the existing scheme, yes, you could make the point that it should have been looked at earlier. I accept that point. But there's no point in bringing in a scheme that makes houses more expensive than they should be. What I'd like to see now, and I expect it will happen, is the government will fast-track the affordable thing now so we can bring in a scheme that does work for people.
Fast-track which one?
The affordable housing, and obviously the shared equity needs to come in as well. Can I just make a point, and we're losing points here.
I just cannot get my head around the fact that you are saying that we have to change this legislation which allows developers five years of a lead-in time.
I think it's just very...
Okay, no, you know what?
The existing scheme that was stopped by the Fianna Fáil government, that particular construct, will not
but it's
work
the new scheme that has been criticised by the ESRI, by
Basically, everyone who was looking.
No, they're saying was based on
your
construct.
And we can see it by an increase by 8.1% in the last year. In I mean, there's been five housing budgets by Fianna Fáil over the last 5 years. There's been housing budgets, and look at the crisis that we're in.
Michael Healy Ray, you were talking on this bill earlier.
Yes. Well, first of all, my independent overview of the situation. I wouldn't accuse Sinn Féin or Eoin Óibrín of rhetoric, because personally, I think that Eoin Óibrín is a very excellent spokesperson, very passionate about solving the problems and the issues that we have in housing. I don't agree with everything he says, or I don't agree with all of Sinn Féin's policies, because I actually believe that if we were to implement Sinn Féin's policies, even though they're nothing but well-intentioned, we would actually make the problem a lot worse. There's an awful lot of what Sinn Féin are saying is 100% correct. And I've debated this with Eoin, and like I say, I think he's a very excellent politician. So I'm not here criticising him, the exact opposite. But what I would like to see the elements of what Sinn Féin are saying that I think is good being implemented. Leave out the stuff that I think is bad and try to see could we come to a consensus where we would improve. But the one thing that people are sick of, Cathy, they're sick to death of report after report and overview and big flowery speeches about what we're going to do. And then what'll drive us stone mad, mental, is when Sinn Féin, or I'd not pick you and Fine Gael, when they have an Ardesh or Fianna Fáil, and they come out and saying, well, you know, we're going to build 30 or 40,000 houses a year, and we're starting right away. Like, how long are we listening to that bulls, what I won't say? And like, people are sick of that. What we need to do, it's very straightforward. We have to protect, first of all, an element of ensuring that we create an environment where the public purse isn't going to be able to see after our housing needs. It never was, it never is, or it never will be. We have to have an element of public and private. But if we don't get off our backsides and start building more local authority houses, and this flowery talk about this scheme and that scheme, a lot of it is nonsense. We need to do what we did long ago. We need to build single rural cottages in the countryside, a thing we were good at and that we stopped. We need to buy land and build houses, local authority houses. We need to create an environment where people who have an ability to come along and do up properties that the state mightn't look at, but give tax breaks, tax initiatives, something to create an environment where we would keep the private sector involved as well in providing accommodation. Because if we don't do that, we're going to continuously fall behind. And last night, I was in a particular area in County Kerry, and that is a beautiful part of the world, Dingle, where housing, or should I say, the lack of availability. If you're a young couple, a young boy and girl who have children who just want to, they're waiting their time on the housing list, they might only be on for a year or two, and they need to rent a house. And the prices that they're being quoted, like, it's crazy. You can't afford it. And even with...
I heard you saying this in the Dollar. You were talking about rents being asked now were funny money.
Yes. Yeah, they are. And like, when I hear in County Kerry of a rent being, 1,500, 2,000, 2,200, like, that's not sustainable. That's not real. That's wrong. Like, it doesn't make sense. Because if you do the sums, and if you get a HAP, we'll say, of even a maximum, just say 620 a month, like, where is a young couple supposed to come up with the other 1,500 or nearly 2,000 euros? You can't do it. Like, even if the husband and wife are partners, or if they're working flat out, like, they're just going to be working for this house. So they'll have no life. They won't be able to afford anything. How are they going to pay for health insurance? How are they going to pay for car insurance? They just can't manage. So,
of course, the other part of this, and it's something your brother actually raised in the Dáil tonight. Do we have that clip, Brian? Yeah, let's play. This is Danny Healy Ray speaking on this debate earlier.
The state are getting 51% out of the rent. So if the rent is 800 to 1,000 euros, the landlord is getting half of that. Surely, with all this talk and all the money you have for housing and all what you want to do about housing, surely he could reduce the tax on the rent, and that would help and ensure that the landlord reduces similarly to the person that's renting.
Owen correctly stated, Owen O'Brien correctly stated this evening, the massive amount of people who have left what we'll call the private rental sector. And unfortunately, when those properties are sold, they're not being sold from one person who was using it as a place to be rented out to another person doing the same thing. They're not. They're being bought by people who aren't ever again going to rent them out. So it's gone from the rental market. Now, the one thing, why are they doing that? One of the reasons is because every time they earn 1,000 euros, they're actually finishing up with 480 euros.
Yeah, I wonder
and
what...
And people have to realise
okay,
that.
I just want to bring Craig Hughes in because he's been waiting very patiently. Craig, were you following that debate this evening?
I caught bits of it, but I think, you know, this is the latest in a series of problems for the housing minister. When the coalition was formed, Fianna Fáil took on the housing portfolio, along with health, two of the very most challenging portfolios, in a bid to really make their mark on this government. But we were 15 months waiting for a Housing for All plan. And then now that it's come in, we've already, the cracks are starting to emerge in it. First of all, the shared equity scheme, as you touched on, this is the latest one. And also now one that tonight people in Fianna Fáil were raising issues were, was the decision to link rents to inflation. As one Fianna Fáil TD said to me tonight, you know, given the amount of billions that was pumped into economies around the world, you know, you didn't need to be an economist to realise that inflation was going to go up. So this is, again, this is another problem created for the housing minister. We're expecting next week he'll debate his Housing for All plan on the floor of the Dáil. The opposition parties are hoping to get the business committee to agree to that next week. But there's a real sense, you know, within Fianna Fáil that unless they can get a handle of this housing portfolio soon and stop the cracks coming from this plan, that they could be in serious trouble.
Yes, and I just give you a flavour of what's coming in on the text line there, Ciarán. Amazing that a government TD feels comfortable bragging that 10% of houses will be social and 10% affordable. The implication is that 80% are unaffordable. That's from Ed. We have Marino, Donnycarney, Eden Moore, Finglas, Ballyfermot, when there was much less money around, enough said. Affordable today are up to a third of a million, which is nuts, says David in Dublin. And Katie, the government line on the housing crisis seems to be, if you can't convince, confuse.
Can I just make one point, Ciarán, and I'll shut up then. When I was in the car on the way out here, a constituent from Kilmeade rang me, and it was about the Housing for All. And do you know what the person said to me? He's on the housing list 9 years himself and his family, and he heard I was coming on this debating and that housing was going to be obviously one of the issues there was. And what he said was, I'll tell you about their plan, he said. It's the housing for a fall. And he can be figured out what and you know, if we think about it, a lot of the people that are on the housing list, that's what they'll say. Yeah. It's the housing.
Let Ciarán come back in now.
The overall issue is about the lack of supply. And there is supply happening. And Michael, I think in terms of social housing, right, progress has been made. And there was 8,000 units last year. It's not enough, I accept that, but how progress has been made. The issue on overall, the issue here is about supply. And in terms of rents, and we'll say that landlords are going out of the markets. If those homes are going to first-time buyers, I don't have an issue with that. What I have for the big
what people, about the issue of tax? The tax treatment of individual, you know, we used to call the accidental landlords, people with maybe one house as their investment for their pension or whatever. Is it fair that they are taxed at the level they are taxed at when you see what the institutional landlords are able to get away with on the tax front?
Not going into detail, that will depend on the individual circumstances of people. If they're on the higher rate of tax, right, then they're going to be paying 50% of the rental income is going to be taxed. I accept all that, right? But when you go around everything, in terms of what I prioritise first-time buyers. I prioritise people for social housing, both on the same level. I prioritise, and that brings in the affordability. And the ultimate thing here is about supply. And within the housing front, it's not just about, we'll say, the affordable and the social. It's also about houses being built. And if enough supply comes on board, by definition then, and there is an issue, and we accept there's an issue in terms of the price of materials at the moment, but ultimately if enough houses come on the scene, then the price of houses should come down and the rent should come down.
But I don't... You would imagine that should. But when we were building 90,000 houses a year, the houses were never more expensive. So...
One of the reasons for that, okay, and it's different from now. The banks were doling out cash for people to buy houses that they couldn't afford. And many of those, I was seeing estates towards the end, and Michael will bear witness to this, Mairead might as well, but I was seeing towards 2007 and 8, where I had 30% of new housing estates in my area being bought by investors, in many cases, who couldn't afford them, and they're the accidental landlords. So this is like, we can talk about what we want, but ultimately this is about supply across a range of areas.
It absolutely is about supply, but I think the point that Michael made in relation to the phone call he got on the way in here is actually a very good point. Like, I think a lot of the time in these debates, we're talking figures, we're talking mm-hmm. different reports, etc., and we totally forget about the actual human element in relation to this. And I'm sure we all hold clinics and we see people coming into our clinics in tears. I would regularly have people crying in my clinic, Mairead, in relation to this.
We are building social houses on the ground in Limerick City. Quite a large number over the last number of years. You can speak to your colleague on that.
Okay, and that's fair enough. But yeah. I'm talking about people who are coming to me in Galway City, and Michael just said the same in relation to Kerry. But let me just finish a point, because I didn't actually interrupt you. Let me just finish this, right?
Yeah.
So I have people come to me all the time who are extremely stressed. We have people who are on the generally people will come to me and there'll be 11 years on the housing waiting list. That will be a normal period of time whereby they cannot get a house. Mm. They are not getting housing. I mean, like, Fine Gael have been in government for 10 years. Like, this isn't something new. This is something that has been ongoing for a very considerable length of time. But we cannot forget the human element. Now, I know you were talking about first-time buyers and you were talking about social housing.
There's a lot of people involved, yeah.
No, I understand that. But we can't forget either. Like, I mean, there's people in all sorts of different types of situations whereby, say, you know, people may have bought a home, have been in an abusive relationship, left that relationship. They're not first-time buyers, yet they still, you know, they're living in refuges, they're homeless, they're living with family in that kind of hidden homelessness. So there's a huge range of issues. In terms of affordability, we need to make sure that, you know, so-called affordable housing, and look, I mean, it's an interesting point by that person who texted in saying that, like, are we saying then that 80% aren't affordable? Well, at the moment, I would feel that 100% aren't affordable.
One of the issues there, once again, is supply. And, Mairead is talking, I have people coming to me. I have people that are on the housing list, but I also have people that are getting social housing.
But Kieran, you're saying one of the issues is supply, as if we've just woken up yesterday and figured this out. We've been saying this for...
No, you're asking me a question. I've given you an answer. And the problem
is it not fundamentally an issue, and has gone beyond that point now where we can go into studio and say the main issue here is supply. As has been pointed out, we've had 4 housing ministers.
3,000 new homes were built in the month of July. So things are happening, not at the pace we would like. And obviously that's what the new government housing policy is about.
Whose fault is that, Kieran?
See, you're going back historically. We just situate. I'm around since
10 years isn't history.
But it's important. We were in a situation that really up to 2014-15, the country was still on its knees.
Okay, so we've 6 years now.
And we have built, in many cases, you had a lot of developers gone out of the situation. But we have built a lot of social houses. Houses are being built. Like, with 25,000 units built last year, they are being built.
But look at that. We all know that there is an issue with the kind of houses and housing units that are being built.
Yes.
You accept that?
Well,
that they're nowhere within an ass's roar of being affordable in many cases, particularly those very high-end apartments that are being built in Dublin.
Yeah, but once again, you're looking to get capacity, and you're looking to get a large number of units built quickly. Personally speaking, for me, I'd like to see more of the terraced and the houses, because that's an issue for me on the ground. And certainly, I would have a personal issue with the very, very high density guidelines. And certainly, something I would have taken, I'm on record on that. It's something we need to look at. But nevertheless, in the round, it's about supply. I'm being honest on that.
There's two other very important things that we haven't discussed at all here really tonight. That is, first of all, the banks. What are the banks doing with all the money? There is millions and millions and millions of euros in deposit in our main pillar banks. And at the same time, when a young couple who are working hard come along and they fill up an application form for a mortgage and they want to buy their own house and they want to get going themselves and they feel they have the wherewithal, the checks and measures that are being put in place on those people. And we don't want to go back to the stage of, well, oh, do you want a mortgage? Do you want a car? Do you want a holiday as well? There's nobody talking about that type of nonsense. I'm talking about people who are working hard and who just want to qualify, and they're not being given loans from the banks. And the money is there by the banks. And remember, they're our banks.
To be fair to the banks now, they are absolutely, they, I'd say there are many cases where they would love to be giving people money, but they are completely tied in by central banks.
Isn't that what I'm just going to come to? It's us as legislators. We have to come along and try and persuade the central bank to change the goddamn rules that are there, who are denying our own working people.
But sure, what good is that if there's no houses to be bought? Is that not just going to drive up the prices of the existing stock?
If you let me finish, I was just going to come to that. The next chunk that holds this is together is, you must remember, we had highly respectable people in this country. They were called developers and they were called builders. Now, I know that there was people who did bad things, who did stupid things, who did horrible things, things that none of us were proud of or we'd never again want to see. But did you ever hear the story where we paint everybody with the same brush? We need developers. We need building contractors. We need people who have the ability to organise work, to buy land, get money from a bank to do that, to go in, get planning permission, get the workers, the skills, the organisation, and to build houses and make them available. How would anybody want to do that when you hear politicians every day of the week? That nearly be, it'd be like something they'd stand in with their shoe when they talk about developers and building contractors. It's as though, oh God, that's a bad word, like we can't. And politicians then meeting with developers or meeting with building contractors and listening to them. I'd be absolutely delighted if there was developers and building contractors that were willing to engage and work and provide the supply that we need.
I want to let Craig in there. Yeah, Craig.
I think the other element of this debate that you haven't touched on yet really is the planning side of things. I mean, we've 80,000 planning permissions in the system that haven't been activated. And if you look at every party in the Dáil, you'll find some who've objected to housing developments around the country. You know, obviously they'll argue for legitimate reasons. But I think one thing that's being ignored at the moment is the issues the planning system in its current state is having in terms of restricting the level of building that we can get to, and that's unless that gets solved, we're not going to reach the scale of development that we need to.
Right, just give you a sense here. Now, a lot of texts coming about Fianna Fáil, and of course, we have nobody from Fianna Fáil to respond to them. Katie, can you please cut through Kieran's waffle? If you're a foreign fund, you pay nothing. If you're an Irish investor, you get screwed, even if it is your pension. Fine Gael, the party middle, my backside, says Gary.
I'm not disagreeing with. I'm just making the point that there is a differentiation between the first-time buyer and the person who owns a property they're renting out. I'm not in any way taking from it. And the person who has the owner a property that they bought and that they're renting it out, yeah, certainly we need to look at that. But when we get around to it,
when are we going to get around to all these things, though, is the thing? Because this apparently has been a crisis now for... When do we first declare it as a crisis?
Genuinely, 10 years.
Land development, we haven't spoken about it. The Land Development Agency is now up and running. And can I just take up a point that Michael made, right? We all deal with builders. I call them builders, really. And the greater majority of them are actually trying to build houses. We need them to build houses.
Mm-hmm.
We also need a system that there's proper regulation around it. What has to happen now, in my view, it's about a holistic approach. The Land Development Agency are now looking about building houses on public lands, and that needs to happen as well. And your problem is that you're coming from a base, as you made, Katie, we were building 90,000 units, which was unsustainable, right? We need to get back to a level of about 35, 40,000 units per annum. We're at 25, we'd hope to build 33 this year. You can't build them all overnight. If we could come out in the morning and build requisite houses, we'll say, it just can't be done. So I think there has to be an element of realism here as well. And I think what's now being put forward by government is a plan where it covers a range of areas.
Okay.
We now need to get it very
much. Okay. Which is what we were told the last plan was.
I do think there needs to be realism.
No, it's a new government.
Yes,
right?
but
And the Taoiseach just said earlier,
is it a radical?
It's an updated plan. I think it's very radical.
The birds in the trees are singing, it's supply. The hound in her basket knows it's supply, and it's only just occurred to Fine Gael. To be fair to them, though, Fine Gael only found out about the housing crisis 2 months ago. Okay, that might be a bit unfair. Meanwhile, and you can see where this person is coming from, meanwhile, my generation will live and die in their parents' box room.
And
another tweet here, imagine being years into a housing crisis and still hearing supply is the issue. At this stage, we deserve more than beige excuses. Anyone could tell you supply is the issue. And we will leave that one there because... we have many crises to move on to. Sláinte Céir, Implementation Advisory Council met with Minister Stephen Donnelly today to discuss the fallout of those shock resignations of Laura McGahey and Professor Tom Keane. Craig, were you across that meeting?
Yeah, so they met today to discuss those resignations and they've agreed to write to Robert Watt and Paul Reid to outline their concerns about over the lack of progress. The remit of the group really is to advise and support the implementation of Sláinte Céir established back in 2018. And I think the sense that they were getting, obviously, in the wake of these resignations was that it had really stalled. And from talking to people involved in the programme, they had felt that there wasn't enough drive, both from the department, i.e. the minister, and also the HSE on this.
Is there an element, Craig, put your ear to the ground, what you hear is that there is a lot of... I go so far as to say dysfunction in the relationships between the department and the HSE at that level?
Well, it depends on what issue. I know, for example, the issue, one part of Sláinte Céir would be to create six hubs, which the HSE say are a bit kind of like the old-fashioned health board. They don't want that. So that's one issue that they've been pushing back against. But I think, the pandemic has been a great disruptor for many elements of society. Some sectors used it to implement radical change and keep it there. But with Sláinte Céir, the health service, the pushback, what they were saying that, look, we've too much on at the moment and this isn't the time to do it. The others would argue, well, if not now, when?
When, yeah. We've got Anthony O'Connor, who was, Anthony, of course, a consultant in Talley University Hospital, and he's a member of that implementation committee. He was at this meeting earlier, which was, of course, a virtual meeting, a Zoom meeting, and he was on with our colleagues in prime time just as we were coming to air. I think we can hear a clip from him now.
There needs to be a public demonstration, I think, of how committed we are to Sláinte Céir. I mean, by that, I don't just mean the minister, I mean a whole of government and a whole of civil service approach. And I think people are rightly rocked back on their heels a little bit by two very high profile resignations in quick succession. And I think, to lose council at the same time would be a blow. But obviously, that's a decision that's in the domain of the minister. And we respect his right to make that. This is an offer that SIAC is making to help out.
And I think Anthony O'Connor referred to that issue of regionalisation that Craig mentioned there, that he says there was some pushback against. Let's hear what Anthony O'Connor had to say about that.
I do believe, and it was the view of council, that regionalisation should have proceeded. But certainly it's a defensible view that you don't do it in the middle of the pandemic. But what we find less acceptable is the idea that you don't then have a time frame for when you are going to do it. We feel that if we're going to say we can't do it from the pandemic, then we need a proper time frame that we can hold people accountable for.
And that was Anthony O'Connor. Kieran O'Donnell, this is a mess, isn't it?
Well, I mean... what you have here really is you have three people resigning, which is very regrettable.
Not just any three people.
Two people.
Well, right. There's three people as well, because we had, and the name is just going to escape me now. Will I put my hand in it? Go ahead, I'll pull the name in a second.
We're fully committed, Sláinte Céir. Like, I think... we can't forget there's 1.235...
Sorry, Geraldine McCarthy, Professor Geraldine McCarthy was the third person, of course.
1.235 million spent in Sláinte Céir. We've seen 800 beds delivered into the system this year. We've seen 50 new ICU beds, which is quite considerable. We've seen across a range of areas. I welcome the fact that a discussion has taken place with the advisory group tonight. They are now writing to both Minister Stephen Donnelly and also to General Secretary of the Department of Health, Robert Watt, and also to the CEO of the HSE in terms of once again looking for a year extension and furthermore to discuss the issues. I suppose.
Well, but if you talk about to people around us,
yeah,
Kieran, and I'm sure you will have been talking to people and listening to what people are saying, yeah, about it. There is a sense that what hope, all the enthusiasm and all the push and the energy that was behind this when it was launched in 2017 is just seeping slowly away.
There's 2 points really for me. I mean, I would like to hear from Professor Tom Keane and also Laura Mahidia specifically why they resigned, right? I don't know what their interaction has been with their colleagues on the advisory group. But we are coming out of a pandemic. We've had COVID for the last 2 years. It has occupied every hour of the day, and I think it's something that can't be looked at in isolation. And I think it should be looked in that context. The government are fully committed to Sláinte Care, and obviously the areas of regionalisation is hugely important. And that shouldn't be forgotten in any shape or form. And I would hope at this stage that discussions will take place.
But you heard what Tom Keane said in relation to this.
He spoke about that he had issues in terms of governance and others.
Weren't there for implementing.
Yeah, but the point I suppose I'm making at the end of the day is that we are, I just, if we didn't have a pandemic for the last 2 or 3 years, then I think it would have, the situation would be very different. But we are coming out of that. We know, for the first time ever, we're getting a proper reopening. But I don't think we can forget there has been substantial investment into the health system in the last 12 months in the tune of 1.235 million, where you've seen
That was spent on the pandemic, Kieran. No, but that was not spent on
800 beds going into the system, with due respect, and 50 ICU beds. They'll be there post-pandemic. And I don't think we can talk about it, but when you look at practicalities on the ground, an awful lot has happened.
Okay, Mairead.
Practicalities on the ground, we have 900,000 people on waiting lists. We have 200,000 people waiting on diagnostics. It's absolutely terrifying for people who are on these waiting lists, waiting for diagnostics, waiting to see consultants. Then there's waits to get into theatres. I mean, this is terrifying for people. This can't just be blamed on the pandemic, 900,000 people. And, you know, we're coming up to the budget this year, and I look forward to seeing what will be in the budget, obviously. But like last year when I listened with interest in relation to the budget, like, I mean, we were promised 15,000 staff. You know, we got 7,000. We were promised there was 160 acute beds, which we didn't get because we were, because the reality was we didn't have rapid modular buildings being put up whereby these 160 could go into.
Delivery.
There was 150 million in community services were promised. Only 75 million was spent. Like, I mean, there was promises last year in budget. Like, are we going to go back into the budget this year? We're going to hear promises and things not be delivered. But the reality is this. There's 900,000 people on waiting lists. And I tell you, if you're waiting and you know that you're ill and there's something wrong, waiting and knowing that there's 899,000 other people waiting, that is absolutely terrifying.
First of all, the resignations to me by very excellent, competent people was a motion of no confidence in the vehicle that they were part of. In other words, if they had confidence in it, they wouldn't have resigned. And they weren't happy with what was happening. They weren't happy with what they were seeing happening. Now, when I hear people talk about changing healthcare and regionalisation, my God, that, like, it just would drive you so mad. Like, it wasn't long ago, we had a health board. Right? It's the regional health boards, and we had the association of health boards from around the country. And on those boards, you had a very, what I would call, healthy, intelligent mix of, you had consultants, you had politicians, you had a group of people, what I would call a group that were bringing it from the ground up and from the top down and meeting in the middle. Budgets were decided at the health board meetings, and they were real meaningful deliveries of expertise, directing the money, whether it was psychiatric, whether it was acute, whether it was the district
hospital. But wasn't the issue at that time, though, Michael, the idea that we needed to take the politics out of...
Yes, and what happened? I'm going to remind you what happened. Mary Harney came along, and I absolutely hate, but it's a fact, I have to say, who was minister at the time, came along and formed the HSE. What was the first thing she did? She kept all the politicians out of it because she said, oh, it would be way better off without the politicians. They were working away, or should I say not working away, and when they realised it was an absolute shambles altogether, what was the first thing they decided to do? Well, we better bring the politicians back into it, which they did, but they didn't give them the same teeth or the same influence that they have, that they had on the old Southern Health Boards. Everybody will tell you that from the abolition of the Southern Health Boards, as it was, or the North Eastern Health Board and all the health boards that were there in a regionalised based way, dealing with their own constituencies. Everybody will tell you that, including the consultants who actually do the operations, the doctors, the people that were involved, they will tell you it has all gone downhill since that time. What are we looking at now? We're trying to get back to where we were. So we left something that was good, and another thing. Michael, then,
but no, why no, not at just, the time we didn't think it was good.
Yeah, right, but not just one point, Kieran, or else do not we'll do. We'll go away, Kieran, and we'll leave it to you. You can come at some other night and have the whole show to yourself. I'm going to make one other point, whether you like it or not.
That was unnecessary, Michael.
I know, but sure.
We're having a chat, right?
Yes.
And let's debate the issues, Michael, okay?
Can I just finish?
Yeah, you can.
If the government were doing so well at present, why am I carrying people up to the north to have their eyesight saved? And if I didn't do that on a regular basis...
State are paying for that, Michael. State are paying for
it. But hold on one second.
Yeah, you better tell people that. The state are paying for that, Michael.
100%. Yeah. I advertise it, and I'm
but
so grateful that it's there.
But you give the impression, Michael, that you're paying for it yourself. State are paying for
it. Michael Martin tried to do that one day and said, Michael, and that blew up in his face as well. I never insinuated. What I do is I organise it, Cathy, right? And I organise the connection.
Do you tell him the state is paying for it, Michael?
No, I don't. I tell him I'm paying for it myself. Don't be stupid on a national radio programme, for God's sake, and don't leave yourself down that way. And I'm just going to clarify what it is. It's a situation where people can't have their cataracts removed here in the south because you're waiting for too long and you go blind. Instead, I organise buses to go to the north. We use the cross-border initiative, which has only been extended until December. And after this December, I'm very fearful for what's going to happen because you've only so much of a time frame when your cataract is ripe.
Yeah,
you
is
need
that,
to
is that gone? I wondered if Brexit was going to...
No, it's there until December. But the problem is, will it be there after December?
Can I just
We were operating so well down here government were doing so well, why would people go blind in the south, in a civilised country, to think that people would go blind under this government? Okay. It's a disgrace. Now, defend that. Treatment. And don't mind saying that
okay,
I'm
okay, Michael, let Kieran come back.
Sure, of course I will.
Thanks, Michael. The Treatment Purchase Fund is one of a range of measures so that people in the country can get treatment as quickly as possible. That's why it's there, and it's funded by the state, ultimately by the taxpayer. Secondly, Sláintecare has cross-party support, and the fact that the committee that's there, the remaining members,
but questions are asked about the political commitment of the government driving it.
Please.
Can I ask you about the question that has been raised in relation to the structures involved there and the unhappiness and the sense that the people at the top of it, of Sláintecare, felt that it should have been driven from the Taoiseach's department and not just be plonked in as another unit in the Department of
Health? I mean, its natural home should be in the Department of Health, right? And Sláintecare has cross-party support. And the fact that the members that are on the advisory group at the moment have asked, this was supposed to conclude in October, have asked for it to be extended to the end of the year, at least, shows that they have firm commitment in the process. And really what we need to see here is discussions taking place. Sláintecare, and I think... Sláintecare is one of those particular that has cross-party support.
It does.
That's why
it does.
And it has to happen.
But clearly, clearly, with the resignations, there's no confidence in terms of government support in relation to this.
The government are fully committed to Sláintecare.
But let's look at...
Is the
government worried now?
No, the government is not worried.
The government has no concerns at all when Laura McGarry and Tom Keane walk off the pitch.
Utterly wants to drive Sláintecare forward. the fact that we have the members of the advice group writing to the government and writing to the minister and writing to the two top officials in the Department of Health and the HSE, seeking a meeting, looking to discuss, that's positive. And I think
the advisory group. They're not the people who are driving this thing. The people who are driving it, with due respect, Katie,
you've been talking about the advisory group, which was headed up by Tom Keane. I'm saying that it's not just about two individuals. It's about a collective group. Okay. And I think the government, we are fully committed to Sláintecare because it's one of those plans that has cross-party support. So let's all get behind it.
We're actually going to have to take a break. I just want to get a couple of texts in on this because we're getting a lot of texts in on it before we take that break. Katie, as a cancer patient receiving excellent care in the private system, I don't want universal access to mediocrity. Utopian socialist projects like Sláintecare will simply provide an equal distribution of incompetence, says Ed. And I have another text from a frontline nurse, Trina, says perhaps the HSE, who see hundreds of nurses and doctors fleeing the system, that they realise at last that protecting frontline delivery of care should be paramount instead of rearranging sodding deck chairs at exec level. As a frontline nurse who is feeling total burnout, I sincerely hope that is the reason. And Katie, GP practices all over the country who are retiring are being taken over by the HSE. Private patients are being left to paddle their own canoe. All other practices full. Please help us get an answer, says Jane. James in Tip, and we'll take a
The Late Debate with Katie Hannon on RTE Radio 1.
Now, it's nearly budget time and we are up to our oxters in kites and flights of fancy. I think all three of you are on the Budgetary Oversight Committee. Am I right in that?
Right.
So you're going to be meeting the Irish Fiscal Advisory Council tomorrow morning. They've been pretty vocal already about, you know, concerns about the way public finances are going and the direction of travel in this budget. Are you listening to them?
Well, I mean, I think they've basically stated the policies pursued by government during the pandemic, they broadly agree with. They have certainly looked at that the debt levels are high, and I think government accept that point. I think where the difference really will be that we believe in government that we'll only run budget deficits for capital purposes rather than revenue, we'll say day-to-day operations from 2023 onwards, because we believe we must do catch up in terms of infrastructural investment, which itself will drive jobs and will bring revenue to exchequer. And if I could take one point, spoke about, and I think they certainly qualified their view in terms that they'd await the outcome. The National Development Plan is currently being reviewed by government. And certainly they've basically stated that they're slightly reserving their opinion until they've seen the NDP itself.
I'm just going to read you one line out of their report on this. By expanding all areas at once, the government is effectively evading difficult choices and slowing the return of debt ratios to safer levels. Mm. And this reduces the scope to ensure that future downturns or crises could be cushioned by strong fiscal support in the same way as it was during the pandemic. So we're evading difficult choices, or the government is evading difficult choices. And I mean, when you look at what we're told welfare increases, pension increases.
But governments have to take a balanced view. And the balanced view here is that we have to ensure that if there are increases in the cost of living for people, that we counteract that with increase in supports. That's by definition, in my view, it's the role of government. Equally, we have to ensure that we bring about a proper capital investment. So what we're looking at is the economy is performing reasonably well, I think better than people would have expected. And I think when the Fiscal Advisory Council see what's in the National Development Plan, I believe that they'll alter their view in terms of the direction we're taking.
Do you believe that, Mairead?
Look, I think when we got into this crisis, the thing that we had was a clear infrastructural deficit. And that left us on the back foot when it came to the pandemic. We see it now. You know, we've had a long, long conversation about housing. We saw it in relation to healthcare, and you know, I've made the point.
Would you disagree with any of the welfare? Any of the?
I think there's a few. Well, like, I mean, I have to see the budget on budget day, unless they want to share it with us beforehand,
they've shared a lot. In fairness, they've given us very strong indications that we're going to see
support for the budget.
I'm just trying to salvage that, Kieran, if you let me.
We actually do need to see it on budget day, right? So there's a lot of issues now, but we have been on the back foot going into this pandemic because of an infrastructural deficit, okay? So what we need to do now is tackle that infrastructural deficit by capital spending and ensuring that on a regionally balanced basis, and Michael will be glad to hear that as well, that also then creates jobs, puts money into the economy, circulating within the economy, and gets people to try and bounce back. Like, that is the key. And this is something that this infrastructural deficit isn't something that I've just been highlighting. It's something that the OECD have mentioned.
Can we talk about the actual measures on the current side? The traditional fiver on the pension. Department of Social Protection telling us that fiver on the pension will have little effect on reducing poverty. In fact, retired people, because many of them are homeowners, are among those the least at risk of poverty. But of course, they are those the most likely to vote. So they can expect a fiver, can they, Kieran?
Well, my view is that I'd like to see, obviously I won't preempt what's going to be announced by Cabinet, but I would like to see an increase in the rates, because I think old age pensioners across the board, I've seen an increase very much in the whole area of energy costs. And that cuts right across. And in my view, that's the role of government, right?
But are we not also hearing that separately there's going to be a package to deal with that?
In what sense? In terms of the...
A welfare package to deal with the energy costs.
Well, I mean, we're seeing reports. Obviously, the fuel allowance would be a factor, right? And there was talk today of possibly a discretionary fund, right? But I don't think that gets away from the fundamental viewpoint that there... We're seeing inflation across the board. I think certainly for me, a fiver increase to older age pensioners is not a huge increase per week.
I'm sure you'd agree with that, Michael. But what about the carbon tax issue? Because now that we're hearing we're going to be facing eye-watering increases in all fuel charges, do we plough ahead and put on the carbon tax anyway, because we said we would?
I thought we'd never get it. First of all, I'll be guided by my late mother, who always said to me, always remember, she said, as long as you're in politics, a fiver a week to a pensioner is an awful amount of money. Because when your ability to earn money is stopped and when you're living on a very fixed income, that being your pension, a fiver was an awful lot. And she always drilled that into me, and I'll be guided by that. But...
Do you take the point, though, about the fact that actually, when it comes to people who are really struggling now, the people who own their own houses are not paying mortgages, are not paying rent, are the people who are possibly the most comfortably off?
I wouldn't agree with that. Now, could I just say one thing? Because when we're talking about
the
budget...
Do you have any facts to back up the lack of agreement there?
I'm over here in the corner, you know, out of the way from you. I get very little chance to contribute. So I just want to make a point, if I can be allowed to make the point.
We'll be sending you the minute-by-minute transcript before this programme
is over. This government, in its infinite wisdom, thought for ideological reasons that it was a good idea to close down two of our generating stations for electricity. They did so, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, and the Green Party. I don't want it to be as though, well, this is Eamon Ryan and the Green Party only, because remember, he was ably abetted by those other two parties, because this was the way to go. Shut them down. Now, what are we going to finish up doing? It looks very like now we are facing a real energy crisis where we won't have light, we won't have power to charge up the mobile phones. So where are we going to get the electricity? Well, Eamon Ryan's idea to solve the crisis at the moment is we'll bring in generators which are gas operated. Now, they're extremely inefficient. They're definitely bad for the environment, right? And they're going to cost an awful amount of money. They're even seriously considering opening up the stations that they close down at enormous expense. Or the other option is we can go to France, we can go to England, and we can import, buy electricity that's generated from nuclear power. Now, I would seriously ask the politicians who supported the closure of our power stations, look into your hearts and souls and think about how foolish and how stupid a thing could you do to close down power stations in a country and then leave us with the possibility, if we don't have blackouts in this country this winter, if we don't have them, I think we might. Okay. But if we don't, we'll definitely have them next year.
30 seconds, Murray.
What I would want to know is why the Taoiseach only a month ago was calling for the fast track of planning for data centres that by 2028 are going to be using 29% of the state's electricity.
What most people want to hear tonight is, will they... that they'll have security of supply.
You had your chance to, and I'm now making this point, and I'm fully able to make that point. The other thing I will say, in relation to pensioners, you can't tell me what other people are on. But I just want to make one more point.
Are we not being warned about brownouts and blackouts this winter?
We have, and we had at the same time we are being fast tracking data centres.
And
Emma
Ryan's minister and said.
I just want to make one last point because, in fairness, I was speaking at that point. Just one last point. See, in terms of pensioners, there's plenty of pensioners that are struggling. The amount of pensioners that actually come to me who are on the housing waiting list, who are unable to afford to get their own home. Let's not forget that the social welfare rates are way below the poverty line, below the minimum essential standard of living.
So there's a lot of people out there.
Okay, I have to take my last break.
The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
And we are out of time. That's it from all of us. I want to thank my guests for coming in to me this evening. I want to thank the team for producing. Stay tuned for Cathal Murray with Late Date. But now we'll hand you over to Damien O'Mara on the Sports Desk.